There's a code of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Now, Professor Carl Quigley also belongs to this world society, this parallel government, as he termed it. And he wrote the book Tragedy and Hope and the other great book, The Anglo-American Establishment, where being the historian, they actually have their own historians for the Council on Foreign Relations, Royal Institute of International Affairs. He said that there's a parallel government, and it's been running the United States, for instance, since for 60 years. And he wrote the book in the 1960s. So every president had been picked for 60 years back then had already been a member. And he said they have members for both parties or all parties. And it's always been that way. We often have to come to conclusions by ourselves. And it's much easier to be given the conclusions to come to than actually come to them by ourselves. Because if you really understood what's happening and really knew it, what's happening in the world today, and incredible, massive movements, all controlled by the same hub. And I mean massive movements and cultures across the planet and amalgamations of businesses, corporations, countries even, and governments, of course, this intergovernmental idea that's been floating around for a long time being implemented to end national sovereignty, admitted to it sometimes by declassified documentation, and also boasted about by some of the players, even though the players who boast are high above governments and yet below those who rule the planet. And when you realize what's really happening, and the incredible, and I mean really incredible, effort and money and manpower, put it that way, employee power, if you like, and massive think tanks and organizations and huge bureaucracies that are not elected by the people, running the whole planet, it really is staggering. That's just it, staggering. I can remember different people in the past trying to get through the system of what they called at the time the conspiracy that runs the world, when things don't make sense to you, with the wars that go on and so on, and the reasons that you're given for wars and all that kind of thing. It doesn't make any sense to you. It doesn't make any sense either why you're asked every few years to vote for governors over your nation, who, and these same people are in some other little secret within this world secret. They're already pre-selected, and Carl Quigley, of course, went into a lot of that. The Pharisees were pretty well forced to go through to elect people in who would go along with what we know is a pre-planned system of the destruction of nations. That is the plan. And a long time ago, people went into the different organizations that seemed to be at the root of it all. And they're all right. Every one of them is quite correct. They go into the low orders of things like Freemasonry. And Freemasonry is an international brotherhood, number one, you see. International is the key. But also Freemasonry is a great sifting field to recruit people who are sworn to keep secrets. And they get tested and tested as they go up the ranks or the degrees. And they're graded, literally, that's the term, you're graded. And if you're worthy to keep secrets and be trusted with secrets, and you've gone to the right education and to the right universities and so on, they might select you to put you up the ladder as a technocrat, for instance, if you're awfully, awfully good at the field in which you're encouraged to go into. And they are encouraged to go into certain fields. They're sussed out and their future's planned for them before they even pick the career for themselves. And so you get the low orders, so that's the sifting ground, find them, you see. Organizations are awfully good for finding them. So are established colleges and high schools even. CIA have often tapped out people in these places is quite common before they even get a degree. A lot of them don't even bother getting a degree. They're pulled right into civil service, for instance. And all countries use the same techniques, and the British Commonwealth countries are no exception. Sworn to secrecy and well paid to do so. And in no time at all, through the establishment and the system they're brought into, and when they're selected as young people, they're given lots of little perks and bonuses and privileges and introduced to the better people, the better class of people, put it that way. And in no time at all, they feel like they're part of it. And of course, look, you know, the general population are inferior to them from then on, even their own families. And again, Bertrand Russell went through that whole system a long time ago. He said when you're selected, if you have the right kind of things they're after, you have to forget your family and the class that you came from. That was a necessity. So you're brought in through different areas, and you're selected and pre-selected and so on. All families too, there are families which are literally intergenerational bureaucrats that are far more important to an extent in countries than elected leaders, because the bureaucrats, when they get in charge of whole massive departments, and for economics and your agendas for progress and business, and that's a powerful position. And they like to select them from within pre-existing bureaucratic families. In fact, they're encouraged to intermarry, in fact, within the bureaucratic class that they're introduced to. And most countries go along the same way. So you have the low orders of sifting people out. There's many ways to find the people that they're after, you see. And then the organisations which they join that are approved organizations is again a selection process that can be pulled out of. So you start off with, even masonry too, the average person going into Freemasonry, the secrets they're pulled into is really the ability to easily tell you the system you're living in as an ordinary person. And here's what marriage will do for you, including the pain that might come with it. And so on. It's really, it's a form of a brotherhood, sure, but also it gives you the plus and the minus of everything that you're going to do in life, the good things, the bad things, and the cost of things, basically, to yourself and all the rest of it. And it was designed in such a way to get around all the obvious failings in a society that was dominated at one time. By religion, mainly Christianity at one time. And so they would give you the humanistic direction to go through, to steer through the culture of Christianity in which you lived at one time. It's very secretive at one time. And that's why it was looked down upon, because it was meant to be a revolutionary force at one time too. Today we have interlocking circles of all kinds of pre-selected people. That's what Carol Quigley talked about. It wasn't just, say, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which is one massive organization that started off this World Commonwealth idea from the Milner Group that ran it all. Before they even had a name for it, it was just called the kindergarten, where Milner's young revolutionaries were recruited and trained for this global system, an empire system, and how they would run it. But it wasn't just taking over for power, it was to make sure that they themselves would collect all the wealth from those countries. And through collection of wealth, you see, the families involved could keep acquiring wealth and across the whole planet, and the wealth then would be used to shape a world still under the control of these few people, basically, relatively few people. And in the US, they called it the CFR, Concerned Foreign Relations. They have an institute for Europe. Of course, they have a European branch now of the European Institute for International Affairs, which is the European branch for politicians in Europe, the European Parliament to belong to as well, you see, alongside the Parliament. And they have one for the Pacific regions, with Japan having a central hub there with top people too, and New Zealand and Australia as all part of it, and some in China now as well. So this is a secret society, or a secretive society. They'll publish magazines and so on, and often give out quite some good details about themselves when they're when they're rolling high, or riding high, because they get a bit careless. Folk love to boast, and it's when people boast that you really learn things that slip out, when they feel safe to do so. It's imperative not to forget what they say in these times, because in a month's time, or even a week's time, it can all be suddenly brushed under the rug and forgotten about, deliberately so. You can remember that Carl Quigley himself said that he wrote his book, Tragedy and Hope, along with the Anglo-American Establishment book. That's the title of the other one. And giving you a bit of the history of this empire-building agenda that was passed on to the US eventually. But he went through the reasons for giving it out. Now, he was given access to the archives of the Council on Foreign Relations, the American branch. And it's now the North American branch, not just the US one, of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. It doesn't go down well, Royal, in America, so they just call it the Council on Foreign Relations. Wealthy families, of course, again, people who were told they're for old families, the same ones that belonged to the old Milner Group and so on, who would accumulate the wealth, be front people for the organizations. I mean this. They always give you front people, but they make them real multimillionaires, at least have to give them money to play with for a while, because they have a big agenda to implement in their tenure, put it that way. And they are certainly well rewarded. Money is a tool to them to govern the world. And so they're famous for giving, just like the CIA, which is a branch of it now, by the way, put out front people and real front organizations. There are genuine organizations that make things, even the computer industry or even the technology industry, or just ownership of it. And they give you the people that they tell you are just awfully clever. But their whole intention is to shape the world and have you all follow along behind it, you see. That's how it's done. Revolution is an important thing to understand, because there's a reason, if you look down through revolutionary history, that even though many people can be involved in the creation of a system through revolution, they always give you a hero figure, an individual to follow. Because humans need that. You can't relate to a faceless bureaucracy. It's a basic, simple thing, but a tribal leader type idea, you'll follow them. And that's why even in the 20th century, they gave you Lenin, you see, the great hero Lenin. Before that, they tell you that Marx was this great. There's whole teams of folk put together the Communist Manifesto. It wasn't just Karl Marx. An organization behind them was huge at the time too. But they give you the individual to worship, because you relate to the individual, as I say, but not to a faceless bureaucracy. And then they gave you Lenin, and then they gave you Stalin. Today, government and what they call governance is so remote from your reality, from your personal reality. Most folk don't even know it exists. They really think that somehow this antiquated nonsense of a party system, this tripe, and that's what it is, it's tripe, is there to take care of them in the way that they are right now, and it'll always be that way. Even when it's changing, and they can't grasp why it's changing, they still go along and vote the same way as always. It's too easy to, because it's really meant to hit the very primitive person, and the primitive part in everybody too. We're big brother, we're daddy, and we'll take care of your needs. We'll get you jobs. We'll take care of your health. We'll make sure your children have schooling and that kind of thing. And welfare. All the things that in modern society. And that's why Quigley said back in the 60s, Carl Quigley, that is, in his own book, Tragedy and Hope, that eventually the parties would all be the same at election time, promising the same things. And therefore, it's more of a competition of who can promise the most of the same things. Depending on the good public relations experts they hire, the big corporations that they hire, big, and they are big corporations, some of these advertising executives, to promote them, then that's generally who you'll vote for. Very simple, very, very simple. But it's managed that way. It wouldn't matter either if the other group were in, because really, for those who rule the world, it's the overall strategy that's important. There's always winners and losers to an extent for temporary periods while they're in power, this party or that party is in power. But as long as whoever party is in must obey and go along with the big, big plan, which they never mentioned during elections, which really is the end of your sovereign nation state as a state. Politicians will lie, especially the ones who are involved in this, they'll lie their teeth off to you if they still have teeth. And they'll tell you, oh, yeah, you still have all these rights and you're still a nation and so on. But meanwhile, you don't. Anything that really, really matters, you're not told about it to start with. For instance, Canada is a good example, and so is the States and Britain and every other country. Were examples of a supra-governmental system. They call it governance, of massive boards of appointees who are generally ex-politicians who make their career of feeding off the taxpayer. And because they're good at feeding off the taxpayer, that they're ideal for taking more tax money to get the big agendas through across the globe, the massive changing face of the world. And they're very, very secretive. They publish little PR pieces that sound almost like wonderful charitable works that they do, but in reality it's much bigger than that, much bigger than that. We're all little peons across the planet, doesn't matter what country you're in. And today, starting from the old organisation which they used to have, based in Britain, that was the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and then now they have the European Group for International Affairs, it's the same body of people, based in London or the headquarters. And they have one for the Far Eastern group as well, Pacific region, the Institute for Pacific Relations. It's the same group. So everywhere for the groups of nations, they have a different name for the same bunch that run it all. Planned and set up a lot before you were even born, and often before your dads were born. Very old. And they set up the IMF and the World Bank and the Bank for International Settlements. They set them all up. And they even said, and Quigley, he was a member of it. And Quigley said himself that eventually everything will be run by, across the whole planet, by the World Bank, the IMF, and the Bank for International Settlements would be the big controller of financing across the world. And it will even fix, which it does, of course, they fix the rates of currencies in every country. And the whole plan eventually, down the road, will be, who knows when, but down the road, they want a single currency. Now they're going to digitalization. It's almost there. Because it really doesn't matter, eventually, what you call your currency in your own little area. But you have no idea. And now the big foundations are a part of it too, because the Royal Institute for International Affairs, they work with the big foundations, that their members set up the big foundations, I should say, which run thousands of NGO groups. And as long as the tops of NGOs are bought and paid for, the followers fall for all the do-gooding stuff that they're supposed to do. I mentioned it before, it's almost like that if you understand, and I hate even going into this term, using this term, this Illuminati term, but you got to understand what, for instance, Cecil Rhodes said in his will. Now, Cecil Rhodes was also a member of this international group to standardise a system across the whole planet. A lot of them were front men too. Even their organisations, to an extent, have always been fronts for something else. But Rhodes himself, who was in partnership in this idea with the Royal Institute for International Affairs, or the Lord Alfred Milner Group, as it was called then, and also his partner in his own group was Lord Rothschild of London. And he talks about it in his will, how he'd left most of the stuff to Rothschild to take over, and I guess to hand out to other groups and so on, to make sure that agenda continues. I was talking about what was coming, what we're living through today, 20, even 30 years ago, and watching it happen step by step, exactly as it was planned to come out, all these different changes in society. And it's like Groundhog Day, where you live the same type of thing over and over, only it's different days lived over, because you've already done it with a kind of precognition. But they published what they planned to do, you see. And this stuff really is all written in books, which they publish themselves in different institutions and think tanks. And again, the United Nations is a massive source of it, because they were set up to be eventually a front, a big front, to rule the world. A front system, you see. And they, sure enough, they packed it with every unbelievable person you could imagine, including the top communists. And they still do that. It doesn't matter. They don't care, like Quigley said, Carl Quigley, who worked for the same big world institution and the CFR, the American branch. And he knew the Trilateral members too. The Trilaterals came a bit later than his last books, but he knew some of them indeed, and he knew it was to come. He had no objections against it himself. Just some of their methods he objected to, but he said himself in Tragedy and Hope, the reason he came forward was because it was time that he thought that the public should know the incredible importance of this society that most folk didn't know existed and didn't know who the members were. Because it had such massive influence on the history of not just America, but the world. And that's quite a little, that's a lot to pack into a one-liner type thing. But that's exactly how we put it across. So these organizations exist. However, facts don't matter when there's big agendas. And your whole life has been living through agendas and you don't even know it. That's the sad thing about it. Because as I've said so many times, you're trained from birth to be naive and to trust using natural impulses that you're born with, basically, to be tribal. And a small tribe, that's how your mind is shaped, for a small clan or tribe, where you have a chief and you elect a chief, and the chief can get ousted or knocked off if he gets too big for his boots by the people, you see. But, and so we're still in that mentality, that mode. And naturally, the chief has got nothing to gain by lying to you all the time, when your whole survival is at stake, including his own, along with you, you see. But when you end up with this mammoth, this modern governmental system, this too big, you can't even imagine it really. You can't, it's a name, it's a term. But you can't really imagine it, because a tribal chief is one person. You can picture him, and you can see him, and you can see his family and so on. But with government today, including the hundreds and thousands of agencies that take the work that's farmed out to them by governments across the world, you can't imagine it anymore, you see. So the whole idea of voting for this person, that person, was gone long ago. They're all fronts to an extent, you see. And it's been that way from at least in that. Well, actually, Carl Quigley mentioned that every member of every party at the top, the top members of political parties in the Western world and in the US, since he wrote the book in the 1960s, Tragedy and Hope, but he did mention that every government had its top members as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And even the name prior to the CFR, before that was formed, is it for at least 60 years? Well, so you do it in the year 1900, when there was an organization still bringing in their own presidents and top members of cabinets into power. Same in Britain, of course, and it was better documented in Britain with the Lord Alfred Milner Group as an example. And the Rhodes Foundation that was associated with them, both working together with Rothschild. And that's no conspiracy theory. You can actually read Cecil Rhodes' wills, you know, where he mentions Rothschild and leaves money to him and back and forth. And personally, I think it was the fact that Rothschild had really funded Rhodes from the beginning, and it's part of the contract deal that much of the money has to go back to the cause, because it's not just a person, Rothschild, it's a cause, it's an agenda, a long, far-reaching agenda, no doubt about it. And Rhodes changed his will quite a few times, by the way, you know, he was a bit off the rails, Rhodes himself, he vacillated back and forth with all the different characters he would leave the cash to. But they remember, they were he was a real believer, Cecil Rhodes, in a world governmental system. Not democratic. He would use that term of democracy to keep the people quiet, you know. It's a great drug, democracy. Because folk really literally sit back and forget to watch with incredible scrutiny the machinations of government. It puts you to sleep, you see. Oh, well, they're dealing with that. They're looking after my rights and freedoms for me. And that's how you see it. And that's how they want you to see it. Really, you belong now to the state. And the state isn't what you think it is. It's some kind of science fiction type state where governments just mandate orders to you and you obey them, but they do it on behalf of sciences and the corporations we have above you. The corporations at the World Economic Forum are quite blatant that they run the world. And they do, to an extent. At least most of them do. They're all part of it. Professor Quigley talked about this phase, and he says the new world order, which they would bring in, would be a form of a new feudal system. He says the CEOs of big international corporations, the big power brokers, would be the new feudal overlords, and you've been watching it your whole life, actually, with all the globalized meetings that they had, the G7, G8s, and all the rest of it, and the big international meetings to do with globalization and free trade agreements that were all the rage through the 2000 onward, even leading up to 2000. Then afterwards, they'd have them in Canada and the States and different places, these big global meetings. They had opposition from students at the time. They brought the student leaders all on board with the organization, gave them paychecks. That's why they don't complain about them now. For those who wonder why it's not happening now. Yeah, they did. They brought them in to the meetings and gave them paychecks for the leaders. So everything's managed quite well now. You live through things. Most folk don't understand what they're living through, or they don't want to remember if it's unpleasant. It's fascinating, really, to see how nefarious society has always been, in a way, and the human mind, especially when it comes to power and politics, the human mind knows no bounds. But today you have corporations that are like countries. They are, and the corporations, unfortunately, also took over all businesses until they are the business, and the country is almost a tool for their labour and for their products, you know. That's how bad it is now with corporations. And I gave the talks many years ago on that too, when Quigley, by the way, gave lectures as well. I don't know if they're still out there or you can find them. But Quigley, Carl Quigley, who was all for the agenda, he was an elitist himself, and he didn't believe in democracy for the people. And he was all for the CFR agenda, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations. And he was all for them creating wars to get their objectives achieved. You know? But Quigley did say in Tragedy and Hope and other short notes he put out too, not that Tragedy and Hope's a short note, but he did say in it that the corporations eventually will be the governmental system of the world. And the CEOs of corporations, he said it'll be a new feudal system where the CEOs are the new feudal overlords over the peoples of the world. Well, if you look at Facebook and all the other social media platforms and Google, and all, they, from the beginning, as far as I was concerned, I didn't want a computer. I knew what they were going to be for. I even did talk shows at the time on radio where I ended it, so I didn't have a computer. And I said, what it was for? I said, these things aren't spontaneous. It's not self-made people come out and just have these big organizations. They're all fronts. That's how the world is really run. And I said, they'll be used against you eventually. And sure enough, that's what you've got. So Quigley's predictions came True, because he was in the know of a lot of it too. He knew the folk who worked at ARPA that became DARPA, and he knew the high tech experts and where they wanted to take the world. But he did say that the feudal overlords would be the CEOs of corporations. And you think about it. You see, in a feudal system, you don't have democracy in a feudal system. It's a hierarchy of what used to be nobility one time. But the thing is, they literally were revolutionary. The whole idea was to fix the world and make it run properly. Not just like the planets would go across, and they thought like a mechanical universe. They wanted to run humankind the same way. And no doubt, too, to more ordinary people with less, who are not in the know of the secret societies with a definite revolutionary mission, the ordinary folk would turn around to and say, there's too many wars going on, etc. And they would always look forward to this when they'd all become one, etc. So that's why they always use these terms. We're a brotherhood, we'll always be one, and we'll be one across the world. And it never pans out that way. Even in modern political parties, you have different groups within parties, representing subgroups and subsects, and even ethnic groups and religious sects and so on. And so the whole farce of the New Atlantis, Ben Salem, where everybody would be equal to an extent to, and a brotherhood all working together, is a farce. It certainly failed that way, didn't it? But was it really intended to succeed? Because after all, Ben Salem was also to be run by an even more secret elder brotherhood, unknown to the people. Well, isn't that what we've got today? Because it certainly isn't the ones you elect. It's not the ones you elect who's running. They rubber stamp things that are put in front of them. But they don't run them. They don't make decisions that way. They really don't. That's the trick of all. And why would they have all these think tanks advising them? Private think tanks. The main one is, again, the Royal Institute for International Affairs - Council on Foreign Relations. Not just a few countries, but they're working for dozens and dozens of countries across the planet now, advising them what to do. Well, why don't you just elect the CFR? Because you are, basically. Anyway, whether you know it or not, you're electing them anyway. Carl Quigley said that. The members of all opposing parties, the leaders of them all, the upper elite group of each party, are all members of the same group. There's a good one there, a good con, eh? Not bad. But the folk never get it. The public never gets it. But the ones who really run it all, the capstone is the eye. Of course it is. That's the money. They all run on the same money system, the same central banking con, where the central banks now are all amalgamating across the planet and all under the same World Bank group and so on, with money out of nothing. And banks, remember, including these banks, live on interest. It's not meant to pay off the actual sum itself. But the interest is where they make their cash. Masses of interest. Forever. It's not meant to ever get paid off. That's control, eh? Because then you do what you're told. Because with every loan comes demands. Social demands. And cultural demands, etc., etc. You're getting the picture. But it's quite amusing, as I say, to listen to the farce of how they portray it. And it's easy, again, to get youngsters on board and with the international socialists and so on, because when you're young, you're idealistic. You see what's wrong, but you see the effects of it. You really don't get the picture of the big evil ogres above it all that are now running you. They're training you to be revolutionaries for themselves, the ones who already run it. You don't quite get it, do you? But a few catch on. And they're the higher intellect psychopath, and they get picked to be future leaders. And they'll parrot all their right. The whole problem with humanity is too many of you, and the rest of it is you're all going to kill the planet off with global warming or whatever it happens to be, as they use environment as their big staff now for total control over how you're going to live, if you're even going to eat, what you're going to eat, if you're going to travel, if you can't travel, etc., etc., where you can live, Agenda 21 for the whole 21st century, blah, blah, blah. They have nothing else to hold on to, except, well, we're going to save you all because you're destroying the planet. That's what they tell you. The same folk the big international corporations put in there. Beautiful, isn't it? When you look back a long ways, you'll find that the group that became the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, same thing. And they also have their group for the whole of the European Union as well, for all their parliamentarians. They set up the Council for Pacific Relations too, to create another trading bloc there a long, long time ago, in preparation for a three main bloc, trading bloc world. And you've been living through it, so were your parents, without knowing it. That's nothing, everything that happened actually in the last 100 years was done by this particular group. They have all the top media moguls in their pocket, of course, they're all members. And their whole goal was always world government. Although they like to call it governance today, it sounds better than government. Somebody might wake up if you say government, world government. So that governance sounds kind of vague and, iffy. And that's how they do it. Basic, simple psychology. But they've worked so hard for a long time to get world government through. And we know that Carol Quigley, who was a historian for them at one point, because they have their own version of history, very important, because they tell you they fill in all the little blank bits that the general history books omit. And they make sure they omit them because their members also write your history for you, the ones that you're going to get taught in school. But they admit that they were behind world wars to get countries to their knees in order to make them give up their sovereignty. Now, these guys who ran this were not what you would think of as a simple communist, by the way. They were multi-billionaires in their own right. If you go back 100 years, even $1 million or pounds was a lot of money, an awful lot of money, because they constantly devalue the currency all the time as they print more and more paper up. But you find that Lord Alfred Milner and his cronies and their descendants still run the inner group today across the whole planet. And as Carl Quigley said, that this group operates, and he was a member, and a historian, he says this group operates, he says, the way that most people think that the communists do, because of so much in common. You think a lot of their goals are the same, actually, but it's really to make their own elite responsible in governing positions across the whole planet. And they're going to run you in a kind of communistic, socialist setting from birth to death down below, which is the majority of the public. That's what it's about. Well, they themselves live like kings, actually higher than kings, because what they can get today with their money through science and so on is so incredibly different from what it used to be. But anyway, that's the world we're in right now, and the push is really, really on. As Quigley said, he said that he agreed with all of their plans. He disagreed with some of their methods, that was all, of how to achieve it, those particular goals. But he was on board with it all. He said, we don't care who we bring on board, communists, fascists, whatever. He says they've got all kinds of, who are members of this particular group. And they have another branch of guys who really do the technocratic work across the world, and that's basically the trilateral group. And the trilateral committee is made up of members of the CFR, and they have a specialized task to perform. Hard to believe for most folk that a group have been operating and controlling the minds of people through all the publications that they own, writing all the books that you get taught in school, university, etc., etc. And at the same time, they have their members appointed to across the world in top positions, from even presidents and prime ministers all the way down. In fact, all the way up, because there's people above your prime ministers and presidents, as you well know. Of course there happen to be. But anyway, they know what they want, and they're going to use all kinds of cons to bring it about. From myself, Alan Watt, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.